a good time.
Have a good time. Hello, and welcome to We Heard Wonders. It was Andrew's birthday. Happy birthday, Andrew.
Thank you. I'm singing my own birthday theme tune here.
The Beatles are singing it just for you. Here's that really long tambourine solo that no one knows why it's there. Here it is. I actually love this song so much. It's so good, isn't it?
This is great fun.
They were in India, right? They're having a lovely time. And they rewrote Happy Birthday. Good on them. Lovely Beatles.
The great Richard pastiche, isn't it?
Yeah. So, 37 years old. How are you feeling?
Oof.
Hanging together.
Just about hanging together, yeah. I had a lovely long weekend for it, which was really nice. I was off work on my birthday.
Smashing.
My son was in nursery, so me and my wife Kirsty actually had a nice day together, which was lovely.
All right.
On the bank holiday Monday, we had a lovely day on the beach with Rowan as well, which was fantastic.
Really didn't want to
go back to work.
Nah. I really found that about the wee weekend there I had off. Like, I just had such a nice time in the sun. My kids and everything. I was like, I do not want to go back to work ever again. So there we go. Happy birthday to you, my man. I'm like,
thank you.
I am currently 38 and I'm creaking round to 39 in October. And then next year, creaking, really, really creaking. Creaking into the big one, the big 40. So I feel like I'm growing a little older, a little wiser. I've grown hair in really weird places. do you recognise that quote?
I now creak in places that I used to play. Is it the kind of Leonard Cohen?
No, that's far too highbrow. The grow hair in really weird places, that is Wayne's World. So
there we go.
You thought too much of me there for sure. Okay, well, happy birthday to you. Shall we introduce ourselves?
Yep. My name's Andrew. I'm a 37-year-old music addict. And I buy records and write about them on Instagram at KidAGH86.
Hello, my name's Ian. I'm 38, but in my head, I'm still 22. When I was a guitarist in Glasgow band, The Deadline Shakes, and we did really cool stuff. And we've got two records out called Zealots and Documentaries, and they're boss, so you should go and listen to them on all the usual places and catch us on social media. Wonderful stuff, man. So we are back with another new music podcast this week, which
is a classic format this week.
It is a classic format, and we had obviously three interviews back to back there, 3 weeks in a row, which we've never done before. Had to have so many interviews back to back. It's just the way the scheduling kind of worked its way out, wasn't it? There's
we
didn't really mean it like that. And they're all very different, and all, I think we enjoyed doing all three of them, of course. But it is nice to be back, just the two of us talking about new music in it.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few tracks that I've been kind of meaning to bring in for a few weeks and just haven't quite found the slot for them. But yeah, this week is the slot.
This is the slot.
So, slot it right in.
It's
going to be good fun.
Yeah, I think so. Just before we get started, I was going to say that one of my oldest friends texted me completely out of the blue today. No, he texts me quite often, but today he caught me on off guard by texting me just a picture of two tickets for Iron Maiden at the Hydro on the 26th of June and just said, what are you doing on the 26th of June? And I said, it looks like I'm going to see Iron Maiden at the Hydro on the 26th of June. So nice. I'm really, I'm excited about that. Iron Maiden are like, I've spoken about this a few times before, but when I first heard Iron Maiden, I was sort of vaguely aware of them and stuff. I just thought it was like really cheesy rubbish, like with a silly cartoon skeleton and all that sort of stuff. And when I started listening to them, I started listening with that kind of student-y, like, irony, like, this is really naff, like, it's so silly, bring your daughter to the slaughter and all that, Reaper and all this. I was just like, this is ridiculous. Until 6 months in, I noticed that I was, like, humming all the tunes, and I was like, how do you play that on the guitar and all this kind of stuff? And then I realised, oh, I think I now unironically like Iron Maiden. Mm-hmm. So I've managed to keep a kind of detached sense of enjoyment. Like, I'm definitely not a super fan or anything like it, but I've seen them before, I've seen them live before, and it's difficult to imagine a more enjoyable musical evening if you like if you like metal and you like that kind of cheesy stuff, it's just such a laugh. And I find that the audience are like not like they're just really unprepossessing, just really like relaxed about it. Kind of everyone knows why they're there. Do you know what I mean? It's you like the songs, you sing along, you pump your fist and all that stuff, but there's a kind of general awareness that this isn't a Beethoven. Do you know what I mean? Like it is what it is. Just enjoy right. it for enjoy it as it is. That's the sense I get.
Is there a lot of like pyrotechnics and stuff like that?
Oh man. Yeah, the last time I saw them, I can't remember the name of the record they had out, but every time they do a tour when they have an album out or whatever, they do a different stage show. And it will invariably involve their mascot, Eddie, the aforementioned zombie stroke skeleton type chap.
Yeah.
Or, like, being on stage, but, like, enormous, like, 20 foot tall in some way. I'm pretty sure the last time he was on an aeroplane, because Bruce Dickinson flies aeroplanes. So yeah, it's, like, it's really, really, it's just fun. Do you know what I mean? It's just fun. It's a bit, probably quite a bit of an older crowd as well. I say as I creak towards my 40s, do you know what I mean? But like, but yeah, it's just going to be fun. So I would say they would fall into my category of guilty pleasure, but sort of not guilty. I just like them and I don't care if anyone thinks it's naff. I do. So tough. You get anyone that falls in that kind of bracket?
I kind of go with you with that kind of idea that, you know, if I like it, then I'm not going to feel guilty about it. I guess there's maybe some things that people might be surprised that I like.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking of like a lot of kind of 2000s pop, I guess, just because I kind of grew up with it. But like songs like Crazy Chick by Charlotte Church, for example, Ooh. Is an absolute Motown inspired banger.
I'm glad you added the word inspired there. The Motown banger by Charlotte Church.
But no, that, have you? Do you recall that song? That's a fantastic song, I think.
I think I do, yeah.
I think we should play it. No.
I was about to jump into action there.
Yeah, so things like that. So, somebody was talking about Samantha Mumba the other day.
Wow. The name immediately springs back to mind, but I have no recollection of music.
Some of her tracks, like this track called Lately that I always liked. Yeah, so there's things like that that I would defend.
Who sang that song, No Letting Go? No letting go, no holding back. Whoever that was, that's an underappreciated gem, that.
Right, that's like kind of reggaeton type thing.
Reggae, yeah. That was when that was kind of every pop song had
like
a little...
Sean Kingston or something like that.
Okay. Something like that, yeah. I'll look it up later on in the show for no reason at all. I won't say it, I'll just look it up. Maybe I'll text you about it later, I don't know. We'll see.
It was the DJ Sean Rowley who kind of started doing these guilty pleasures nights.
Mm, yeah,
and the kind of stuff that he was kind of reviving was a lot of the kind of mid-70s soft rock stuff. You're kind of Captain and Tennille and Bread and acts like that. They were just really kind of uncool at the time and kind of like Wings almost.
Yeah.
Like Wings adjacent type stuff. And interestingly, one of the groups that we're going to be looking at tonight is kind of pulling in a lot of references from that time period, but now they are quite cool. A lot of these groups have been kind of rediscovered and are appreciated in a non kind of ironic way these days, and you kind of appreciate the craft of a lot of the songs.
Yeah, the craft of Wings. I mean, I know you're not talking about Wings specifically, but just when you mention them, you know, the craft of Wings albums and tracks is just ridiculous. Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous. What an outfit. What an outfit. Yeah. I sounded like Harry Redknapp there. I'm not really sure why. The thing that all that guilty pleasure stuff reminds me about is something that I do sometimes forget, because we're like, obviously we are reviewing music, so we're trying to work out. We're trying to apply a sort of set of like rules that we pretend are kind of objective, but are really just totally subjective, I suppose. Like. Sometimes we'll listen to something and I'll go, that's rubbish, and you'll go, that's great. And well, neither of us are right or wrong. It's just music, and people are going to like it or not like it. You know what I mean? There are people out there, right, who unironically bought R. Kelly records and would be in their own house listening to R. Kelly completely alone and enjoying that experience. Now, I cannot fathom that. Can you fathom doing that under any circumstance?
Not especially, no. Especially not in 2023.
Well, I'm not talking about his troubles, you know. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about his just his musical career. I'm divorcing the art from the artist here, and I'm saying it's shite.
Listen to Bump and Grind by yourself in your bedroom.
But people, of course people do. People cut about listening to PJ and Duncan. You know what I mean? Ant and Dec, whatever. Like, D-Ream. People are listening to D-Ream probably right now on their own. In their own house and having a great time. So to an extent, what do we know? Do you know what I mean? Like that, and more power to them. Hope they're having a great time. So all of which to say is I'm looking forward to going to see Iron Maiden, and I'm gonna come back full of reviews about it.
I look forward to that.
Now that kind of sparkling and witty banter that you just heard from us there is the kind of thing that you might say to yourself, these guys are really good at music podcasting. I wonder if there's ways I can support them in their music podcasting endeavours. And there's lots of ways you can do that. The primary ways that you can do it are the ways that Andrew enjoys the most, which are, please listen to the podcast. Please, if you do listen to the podcast.
Please!
If you do listen to the podcast, which you obviously are doing right now, if you can hear me, but if you listen to the podcast, tell a mate, tell someone who listens to music, here, do you know what? There's these two guys, they talk a lot of sense. One of them likes Iron Maiden, we're not sure why. The other one likes Samantha Mumba. It's weird, but you'll like them, they're nice. Put the podcast on and obviously interact on our social media. So you can find us at We Heard Wonders on Instagram and on Twitter. And yeah, that's the main way we would like you to support the podcast. Really send us comments, send us messages, all that good stuff. But you might also be saying to yourself, can I support this podcast financially? That's a question people are probably asking themselves, Andrew. And you know what?
Yeah. What?
They can.
Yes.
Yes. What they can do is they can take themselves to www.buymeacoffee.com and they can buy us an apple and raspberry tea, which isn't a coffee, but is served at coffee shops. And for that, they can give us some money, which we'll put to the ongoing running costs of the show, because this isn't making us millionaires, let's be honest. Cool. So on that happy note, shall we bring ourselves to our new music? What have we got today?
Yes, so we've got five new-ish tracks. As I say, we're kind of catching up on a few things. We've got Teenage Fan Club.
Up the Fannies.
Up the Fannies. The Lemon Twigs. Mong Tong.
Sorry, I'm really interrupting you, but I wanted, when you said the Lemon Twigs, I thought I better have a witty lemon things to say. I didn't have any. So, Lemon Twigs.
Thank you. Maybe I'll steer clear of this one.
I'm not going near this one, man. On you go. I'll remain Mong Tong. Mong Tong.
Casa Overall. And the final act is Emma Tricker.
Emma Tricker. Very good.
Tricker up her sleeves.
Emma Tricker, you to listen to this podcast. Right, so we are, yeah, so five new tracks, and I have to say, having obviously listened to them in advance, this is a good show. This is a good show waiting to happen. Not because I blindly love all five of these tracks, but because they're all worthy of your attention this week, and hopefully some good discussion from Andrew and I. So here we go. So we just get started. So this is first new track of the week. This is Bells Hill's Finest. Apart from my dad and Ali McCoist, Teenage Fan Club with Foreign Land. Stone. There's your teenage fan club with a lovely comeback single called Foreign Land. And I believe this is precursor to a record coming later in the year. Is that right, Andrew?
Nothing Lasts Forever, it's called. Beg your
Nothing
pardon.
Lasts Forever.
Nothing Lasts Forever. Yeah, you're right. This is an album that's coming out on the 22nd of September. And it's the second album that they've made since the departure of original bassist and songwriter Jerry Love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is them sounding on really good form, actually. And for anybody that doesn't know, as you say, they're Bells Hill's finest and they are a Scottish indie institution.
Absolutely.
You know, just everybody knows and loves Teenage Fan Club.
Yeah.
And they formed in 1989. And around the kind of three main vocalists, so you had Norman Blake, Raymond McGinley, and Jerry Love, as I say. And yeah, they made those stunning records in the kind of early to mid 90s. Grand Prix probably being my favourite of the lot.
Yeah, that's my favourite as well.
They were name checked in interviews by Kurt Cobain. He described them as the best band in the world. Around the time of their debut, Bandwagon-esque, which is a fantastic record. And Liam Gallagher once described them as the second best band in the world. I mean, who he thinks is the best.
That's top two either way, do you know what I mean? So I know we can take the mickey out of that, but like at the time Liam Gallagher said that, I think in like 1997 or 1998, I mean, that was actually it's a pretty good compliment, really. Yeah. He's basically saying, other than the band I'm in, I think this is the best band out there. And Cobain said similar things. And they've like supported, like, as well as being a big headline band, they've supported like Foo Fighters and loads of people. And the various members of Teenage Fan Club have gone on and done millions of side projects that you take too long to even pull apart. And My first introduction to Teenage Fan Club was the record Songs from Northern Britain. I don't have the year that came out to hand, but it must be around about 1997. Because I remember the Liam Gallagher, I don't remember the Liam Gallagher quote, but I remember at the time someone saying, oh, Oasis really like Teenage Fan Club and they're Scottish. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was the first record I heard of theirs. And I didn't fall in love with it or anything, but I was really just aware, that's cool, that's out there. And then when I was a student, I did my listening to Teenage Fan Club.
I think there's something about that kind of idea of them being people's second favourite band kind of thing. It's like, I'm sure there's loads of people that have them as a favourite band, but there's something about them that's just so undeniably good. And I can't imagine anybody not liking them, you know. It's there's something really kind of robust about songwriting and everything.
There's a lot to like. A lot of personality. Yeah. And when we used to go out to nightclubs and we used to go to like the indie disco or whatever, my friend would always, this one particular person would always ask the DJ to play Teenage Fan Club, and we'd end up sort of yelling at the DJ for Teenage Fan Club over and over until eventually we'd relent and play Sparky's Dream, which is my favourite Teenage Fan Club song. So yeah, there's a lot to like. This particular track, which we've not really reviewed as yet, has that kind of classic kind of Teenage Fan Club sound, sort of. It is reminiscent of, you know, their influences, as in, you know, reminiscent of like 70s kind of folk rock era stuff. They were spikier at times, especially when they were younger.
Yeah.
But this is quite a mellow track, and I like the sentiment of it, about the past being a foreign land and let's look to the future and be positive. I mean, there's nothing not to like about that. The one thing I would say about it, though, is it's not an excessively long track. It's 3 minutes and 54 seconds, but the last minute, to me, I just don't know what it's there for. It's a groove, and you're feeling it, and there's just a sort of whittly, like, I think it's an organ just whittling away over the top of it for the last sort of 45 seconds to a minute. And it doesn't annoy me or anything, but I just kind of think, oh, you know, it would be better, I think, if it was just tighter, if it was just wrapped around the verses and chorus and so on. But what I don't know is, sorry for going on, I do like to go on.
No, you're not.
What I don't know is what role this plays on the record as in full. So maybe like when you hear this and it's this track sandwiched between two other tracks, maybe this extended outro makes perfect sense in the context of the record. So I don't want to damn it with that, but it was a question that was in my head, like, why is this there? Because to me the first two-thirds of the song, the really harmonic bit with the singing and all that, it's just great. It just sounds lovely, and it's not going to change my world necessarily. It's not anything groundbreaking, but it's that kind of like sweet spot of like, it's like we just said a minute ago, who would not like that? I mean, it's just, there's so much to like about it. It's very very fun and lovable, and yeah, so that's my review of the track. What do you think about it?
I like the track. I think when you're asking about that kind of organ outro, I think that is them trying to say, you know, we're coming back with this kind of classic Teenage Fan Club sound, but we're doing something slightly different. And I think that slightly different thing is coming from the newish now member Eros Child. Mm. So he's a guy from Gorky Psychotic Monkey, and he'd been involved in the project Johnny with Norman Blake as well. So he's been brought in to kind of replace Jerry Love, but it's just to kind of make it feel like a full band again, I guess.
Yeah.
So he's coming in with the vocals, backing vocals and keyboards, organ on this. So I think that's maybe like his influence coming through on that. And the last album, Endless Arcade, that they did in 2021, that was a very kind of downbeat record, and it was them really kind of looking back and thinking about kind of change and aging and time passing, that kind of thing. And you know, that kind of the past is a foreign land. You know, that comes from a LP Hartley Quote, they do things differently there. And that kind of, the album title is on Nothing Lasts Forever. So again, all that kind of sounds quite melancholy, but I think the track itself has got a kind of a bit of a drive to it. And
yeah,
you were saying that they were a bit kind of harder and heavier in the past. I think there's a little bit, at least there's a bit of kind of like distortion and stuff to the guitars that maybe was kind of missing off that last album. So I think that they're trying to like do something that's a little bit kind of freer and maybe looser here.
Yeah.
I think that's where that kind of organ comes in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might be wrong, but I can imagine this maybe being an album opener, maybe.
Possibly.
I might be wrong.
But, possibly.
But I can see them kind of leading in kind of loose and kind of leisurely fashion with this.
Yeah. I mean the thing about the let's make it tighter and chop it up and all that sort of stuff. I don't know where that comes from. Because it must come from some sort of commercial thing that's been sold to me over and over again in terms of pop music and so on. No, I mean, why not? I mean, let it ride. It's a cool vibe they're on. That's awful chat, Jesus. But the groove they lock into, the bass is thrumming away and all that sort of stuff. It's a perfectly good. So why chop it shut? There's no yeah. reason for it to be shorter.
I guess they've kind of been known for their craft in the past. They do kind of come from that kind of Beatles school,
yeah.
like a big star school of kind of classic songwriting. So they have been known to do that in the past. But as I say, I think they are maybe trying to do something just slightly different here.
Yeah, just let it ride out a little bit.
And, yeah,
yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I just do want to say it wasn't really a criticism. It was just really an observation, like. I just couldn't justify in my head, like, why is this outro so long? But as I say, it might be when you put it in the context of the record that it just really makes a huge amount of sense, particularly if it's an album opener, setting the tone for what the rest of the record's going to be like. Maybe track two picks up and does something completely different. And so it's a nice kind of contrast from track one to track two, if it does end up being the opener. So, but yeah, man, this is a record where... I didn't realise Teenage Fan Club were having a new album coming out, but that'll be a definite listen for me. I did spin the 2021 record when it came out as well, but no, I didn't give it a huge amount of attention at the time. But I mean, sure, I'll listen to some more Teenage Fan Club. Why not, indeed? Good stuff. Right, so next track up is The Lemon Twigs. Not an act I'd heard of before. I'm sure you're going to tell us all about who they are. And this track is called In My Head. In my head.
Oh,
I mean, that's really good, isn't it? And that's the review. On to the next track. So, like, I'm gonna put forth a scenario to you, Andrew.
Okay.
Let's say you're in a car, right? And someone says, Andrew, put a song on, right? So you say, okay. So you get your phone and you put on In My Head by the Lemon Twigs. And a minute in, someone else in the car says, oh my God, that's awful. That's horrible. Put that off, right? What you must do is ask the driver to safely stop the vehicle, and you must eject that person from the vehicle, because clearly they're not a person you should ever spend any time with. Does that sound fair enough?
It does, apart from the stopping safely bit first. Just chuck them out. Just chuck them out to the cold shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah, chuck them. The hard chuck shoulder. Give them the cold shoulder. On the hard shoulder, yeah. Just throw them out on their head whilst listening to In My Head by the Lemon Twigs. So yeah, I mean, like, the record is called Everything Harmony, which is a pretty apt way of describing the music as well. It's just this is one where I know I'm gonna get into dissecting things and stuff at some point here. I don't want to. I just really like this as it is.
It's just ear candy.
Yeah, it's just this craft. There's just real songwriting and musical craft and production craft in this. And it's actually better on those early couple of lessons before you start peeling away the layers and looking at what's working. It's just good when you just go, oh, that's just really, that just sounds fantastic. Like, that's amazing. But like I said, Lemon Twigs, not familiar with them or their work. So I'm looking forward to you telling me all about them.
Okay, yep. So Lemon Twigs are an American rock band from Long Island, New York, fronted by brothers Brian and Michael D'Addario. What's it? D'Addario?
D'Addario is a brand of guitar strings as well as being these guys' names. So it's D'Addario for sure.
D'Addario. Thank you. Brian was born, this is, we were talking about age earlier, Ian, this is sickening. Brian was born in 1997.
When?
Michael was born in 1999. And they're just sickeningly talented, these boys. Yeah. Both brothers are vocalists, songwriters, and multi-instrumentalists. So I think they kind of swap instruments live and that kind of thing.
I bet they can run really fast as well and hold their breath for a long time and stuff.
Yeah, just sickeningly good. Their father, Ronnie, is a musician and songwriter, and their mother... is a neuropsychologist who pursued acting in her younger years. So they come from like a household that was kind of very much a kind of, you know, one that was all about kind of entertainment, I guess, or performance and really musically talented. And the Lemon Twigs have been playing together from a very young age. There's some really kind of cool footage of them as like high school performers and that kind of thing, and they're in kind of bands at school, but they're also playing in like theater productions, and they appeared on like a lot of TV shows and films and that kind of thing. And similar to Teenage Fan Club, I think there are quite a lot of similarities actually.
Oh, yeah,
I kind of put these two tracks together.
Yeah, it makes sense.
They kind of share out the songwriting duties, with the brothers taking lead vocals on the tracks that they've composed. So there's two very particular types of track that are on their albums, and they're just both amazing at those two different styles. So this track is one of Michael's tracks, so he kind of goes in a more of a kind of power pop direction, that kind of big star style, which they're just absolutely fantastic at. And then Brian's tracks tend to be a little bit kind of mellower, and it is kind of touching on that kind of guilty pleasure stuff that I was talking about earlier, that kind of very kind of twee, very crafted 70s AOR pop, that kind of like Wings and Bread and Supertramp and things like that. But as you say, they're just incredible at craftsmanship and the harmonies and the melodies, and they're just really, really good at songs basically. And that title, you know, Everything Harmony, like as you say, it's just everything is harmonious on this album. So this is like the fourth album, and I'd say it's their most kind of accomplished to date. You know, just really consistent, just so listenable. and the songs are just brilliant. I'd really recommend. I think you'd get a lot out of this album, actually.
I think you
enjoyed
would
that track.
I think it would too.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And as a group, they've kind of played on quite a few cool records as like a backing band. So they were on Wise Blood's Titanic Rising. They were in her band.
Yeah.
They played on Foxygen's album, Hang, and Tim Heidecker's Fear of Death as well. So yeah, so lots of really cool albums. Their second album was called Go to School, and it was a concept musical album about a chimpanzee raised as a human boy. And that was like that didn't work for me. That was a bit too campy and a bit too shticky.
Yeah.
Schlocky. But as I say, this one's just really hitting all the notes for me.
Well, see, to me, like from the outside, like I'm only working with the track itself and the record sleeve. And before I listened to the track and I looked at the sleeve, I thought, is this going to pass the sniff test? You know, the sort of like, is this going to be a total, it's not a pastiche of like the 70s. It's just trying to do stuff like the 70s, but it's not the 70s anymore. Mm-hmm. And the sleeve does look a little bit like that. I was a little bit worried about that. It's a sort of like really retro clothes they're wearing, and they're on like a sort of fire escape. Even the type of photography and the typography of the lettering of everything, harmony and everything, it is a little bit pastiche. And just when you say that there about the musical thing, that does worry me a little bit. That's a little bit too far, perhaps. But you've just, I mean, this track is just, it's just stunningly put together. I mean, it just sounds completely effortless. And anyone who's listened to this who plays music will know that what's on that record is not effortless in the slightest. That's the product of deep thought and planning and all that kind of stuff, which is not sexy, but I mean, it is what it is. I particularly like the guitar playing on this. It's so, so, so clever how the guitar playing interacts with the melody and harmony of the two voices. It's genius stuff. It reminds me of the Beatles. A lot of that guitar playing, and Steely Dan. Steely Dan has a lot of like guitar playing, which is like this. You know, the sort of really like high point poppy Steely Dan of the 70s. This is reminiscent of that. So it's not new. It's not something, you know, you're not gonna listen to this and go, I've never heard this before, but it's just so sweet. And so well put together. It's just lovely.
In terms of the structure of it, like the last kind of minute, maybe even minute and a half, is just them doing harmonies, and it's kind of wordless.
La la la.
But it works. It doesn't feel like it's dragging on in any way.
Well, it's interesting that you put these two tracks back to back, actually, isn't it? It really is, because from a structural point of view, I would say this one is doing the thing that I was saying, like that it is a bit tighter, a bit shorter. And that latter half, because of the vocal harmony and how beautifully like trebly and chimey and all that they sound, even though they're not singing lyrics, it does feel like it's going somewhere musically, and it drives the track onwards. Whereas the Teenage Fan Club one, I mean, it's obviously not trying to do that. It is more jammy and kind of pondering and wondering, you know, open, exploring and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas the Lemon Twigs one is much tighter and more organized. So, but I mean, they're both well structured tracks, so no doubt about it. They're just doing a different thing.
Definitely. And yeah, it's just there's that really strong Beach Boys influence on that. Even like the title, like, makes me think of In My Room, Brian Wilson song. But whereas like Brian Wilson, he goes to his room and he feels kind of comforted and he feels like understood in his room. Here you've got Michael talking about, you know, being kind of confused in his head and feeling sad all the time, kind of thing. So they're kind of doing that kind of classic thing of the music's really uplifting, but the words underneath are actually quite sad and quite poignant.
It's good that, isn't it? It's great when people do that. I mean, we in the Deadline Shakes, we've deliberately, or I say we did, Greg has deliberately like written tracks with that dichotomy in mind. You know, he's written lyrics that are like that, and then underneath it we're trying to sound really bright and all that kind of stuff. So it's just something that works really well in music, and it gives the listener something to kind of hang on to and think about. So yeah, that's a knockout, walk-off knockout winner for me, that one. That's an easy one.
Yep, me too. And as I said, the album is absolutely brilliant.
So is that a record purchase for you? You getting that one?
Yep, I've already got it.
So yeah. Wouldn't have expected anything else.
So yeah, it's brilliant. I was struggling to pick a track to bring on, to be honest, because there was like so many that I could have picked. Mm. But yeah, that's a big shiny single, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So, yeah. I should probably ask you that more often. We should make that a feature of the show every time we're like, have you already purchased this on vinyl? Are you going to, or are you going to wait for it on sale, or are you not interested? Or
I think you can often tell.
Maybe, yeah.
But yeah. Yep, do that.
Good stuff. Right, so that brings us to track three, which is Forest Show by Mong Tong. So is this another sort of 70s inspired, poppy, you know, folky, electric guitar-y, drummy, singy, bassy one?
Definitely not.
Okay, fair enough.
Now for something completely different.
Thank you. adjust your podcast. This is your brain on drugs. This is the sound of drugs in your brain. I can only assume that is what it sounds like. That is Mong Tong with Forest Show. And I actually came back to the house the other day, Andrew, and there's a crowd of about 100 to 200 We Heard Wonders podcast listeners. And we're all just like, when are you going to review Mong Tong?
We're giving the people what they want.
When are you going to review Mong Tong? Come on. We love the Taiwanese duo that make music that I don't know what it is. Best of luck. Best of luck to Andrew and Ian as they endeavour to make sense of what Mong Tong is. I have to say, by the way, I'm taking the piss there a little bit. I have to say, I'm actually quite positive about this track. I really did enjoy it.
Good.
I just don't know what I just listened to a lot of the time. There's desperate wee elements where I'm like, oh, I kind of understand what's going on here. Like, I hear the gamelan at the start, you know, the be-ba-bong, be-bong, bong, bong, that bit, and I'm like, gamelan. And then I hear, like, Jimi Hendrix guitar in the middle, and I'm like, wow, a guitar. And then kind of scratchy beats and bass, and I'm like, dance music. But none of these things have ever been put together to the best of my knowledge. It's like taking a cucumber and peanut butter and mayonnaise and putting them in a blender and then just drinking it afterwards. It's weird.
A disorientating smoothie.
I would say so.
I think that you've kind of summed it up quite well there. I think one of the kind of interesting questions as well is, like, what is this music for? I guess, like, because I do enjoy listening to it, and I'm intrigued by it. But yeah, if somebody was just totally mystified by it and said, "What is it for?" I would kind of struggle to say.
Yeah,
I just kind of really like the kind of vibe of it and the groove of it, I guess. And it possesses quirks without being overly quirky for me. Maybe I think I
know what you mean. Like, it's not like sort of.
It's not played for laughs, or
no, it's not played for laughs, and it's not gimmicky to the point of being ridiculous. And certainly, we could think of examples of similarly experimental, trippy dance music that's just kind of weird, and not in a good way. But that's kind of joyful and fun, I would say.
I think so. So Mong Tong are a sample-based psychedelic group. That's how they kind of describe themselves from Taiwan. They started as a two-piece, again consisting of brothers, Hon Yu and Jun Chi.
Mong and Tong.
Yeah, I suppose that is. Yeah, maybe I don't know. I don't think that is what they're going for. But I think it does come from some kind of childhood nickname. And they've said that Mong Tong means many things in Chinese, but the translation they choose to fit their music is the East Side of Dreams. So they are kind of going for this kind of. Yeah, just a little bit cosmic, a little bit psychedelic, a little bit out there kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're inspired by Southeast Asian culture, mythology and folklore. But they're also like pulling in, as you say, there's just these kind of disparate elements that are all kind of being pulled together here. So 60s and 70s psychedelic music, 80s movies and video game soundtracks, as well as 90s synth pop from China. So they had like a debut album in 2020 called Mystery, again, quite an apt title. And that kind of featured loads of playfully odd bleeps and bloops that were kind of samples from these kind of 80s video game soundtracks and things like that, as well as like sound effects from cult movies. But they were adding that to these kind of like motric beats and things like that. So they're on Guru Guru Brain, which is the label of Kikigaku Moyo and Minami Deutsch. Both two acts that we've reviewed before, and I think we were kind of saying kind of similar things. So you kind of know where you are with that record label, I guess. They are kind of slightly outre, slightly experimental.
And just a lot of syllables as well, just a huge number of syllables.
But I personally have a lot of time for this kind of stuff. I really enjoy it. And they talked about being kind of growing out. So this project kind of grew out of a feeling of being tired and bored of playing in traditional rock bands. They said, "We want to make something about Taiwan. We want it to be fun and really challenging. That's how we started. So they are wanting to try and do something slightly different here.
Yeah.
And they've talked about the second album, Pow Fire. So they've got kind of Taiwanese instruments in there. As you say, gamelan music, pin music, tabla. But they've also kind of bringing in these samples from Taiwanese life. So that there's like samples from traditional weddings and funerals, different celebrations that you would typically get in Taiwan.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, are they like steel drums in there? Is that the kind of main kind of riff, right?
I think that's what I think that's what a gamelan is. I think a gamelan is a steel drum.
Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, the gamelan is a musical style. My mind is casting itself all the way back to higher music here when I sat it in the year 2001. But gamelan is a style of music, and I think the steel drum is also called the gamelan. Feel free, anyone, to fact check me on that. I could well be wrong.
That's cool. Yeah, so I'm assuming that's a sample from, you know, that would be one of those kind of ambient samples. I might be wrong about that. Because when I was like seeing who was playing what in the track, it was, you know, your kind of bass and drums, and then there was like programming and synths and samples and things. I'm assuming that's what that is. But yeah, it's just a kind of quite a novel mishmash of different things, I think.
Yeah.
And it does get into a quite a kind of cool groove, I would say.
I would say it's definitely as well, that you can tell it's Asian, and I'm choosing my words very carefully because I don't want to say anything like offensive. I definitely don't want to say anything. I don't want to say something positive. But it's definitely got an Asian vibe to it.
Yeah,
I think obviously the gamelan music will definitely take you in that direction. But gamelan, I think, and again, so I'm going back 20 years here, but I'm pretty sure that's like Indonesian, in origin. So it's from that part of the world. But what I think they're doing there is they're taking like an Asian influence and Asian samples, but then they are bringing like traditionally Western sounds to it, like that wah-wah guitar playing. I mean, that could be Jimi Hendrix. It's Jimi Hendrix-esque. So they're picking and choosing diverse parts and bringing them together. I just don't know what a whole record like this would sound like. You know, I don't know if 45 minutes to an hour of this would maybe kind of get to me, but this would be cool. I think this would be great as a, you know, this would be great in video games or possibly like in a movie soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I could see like a scene from John Wick with this as the backdrop to it. Do you know what I mean? Like this could really work in a kind of action thriller like that kind of thing. So maybe they'll find that kind of, you were saying, what's the purpose of this? I mean, I could see this soundtracking things as much as anything else. So a strange one, for sure. Strange one. But we're here for the strange ones, aren't we?
Definitely, yeah. I think I think that's something about the classic pod, you know, format, the kind of five tracks. You've got room for tracks like this, I think.
You've got room for a weirdo. Yeah, if this was an interview and we had two tracks, I feel like we'd probably just be like, here's Teenage Fan Club and the Lemon Twigs. But because we've got room, we've got space for, you know, taking on all comers, because we're an inclusive podcast, a tolerant podcast, a respectful podcast, we have room for a couple of weirdos. Like us, of course.
Definitely, yeah.
Weirdo one and weirdo two. speaking of weirdos. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Weirdos in chief. Speaking of weirdos, we're going to listen to the track Make My Way Back Home by Casa Overall. And the record sleeve for this, I mean, I don't know where to begin. So it's a guy, looks like he's just come out of his work. He's got on like a Next zipper, half zip, and he's doing a sort of mad face with like eyes going all squiffy, and he's in black and white, but the camera's been shaking, so it's like out of focus, an action shot, and it's just this close-up of his face making a weird smiling manic look.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring this up before we listen to the track, because I do think that image interacts pretty well with the track. Like, I think it's a good combo of things. So if you're having it, I'm sure Andrew put this image on our Instagram post when we released the podcast. So if you're listening and you haven't looked yet, go and have a wee look at the... is this the album art I'm looking at here? So it's the Animals album art, yeah. It's quite a thing.
And it's Animals in all caps.
Animals!
Again, that's saying something, I think, about the tone of the thing.
Yes, so this is going to be mad as well, is what we're trying to tell you. Here we go. So, Make My Way Back Home.
I can't complain.
What's your life like?
At a loss for words, I can't complain. I sowed the seeds and prayed for rain. I filled prescriptions to block out visions. Still feel the tremble of a victim. Swallow my arrogance. Do the math of a mismarriage. Plus a couple miscarriages. Dreams never came true. Family that I never knew. Plus a couple niggas hating too. Now the music is my therapist. We talk it out every night in a booth. Trying to repair this shit. We all trying to break free like a bird in the wind. Cause we all going home in the end.
So there's Casa Overall with the track Make My Way Back Home. And just before we listen to the track there, I made reference to the fact that, hey, this one's a bit crazy too, but not in the same way as Mong Tom, obviously. It's crazy in a kind of in a controlled way, this one. But there's just a lot of textural disparate elements to this track that make it kind of a complicated listen in some ways. And I do have some I'll raise the questions in a minute once we hear about who Casa Overall and Co. are. But there are questions I have about this, about certain choices on this track that I just can't understand. They don't make sense to me. Maybe you can make some sense of it for me. So Casa, who is Casa?
Yeah, Casa Overall is a Grammy-nominated musician, MC, singer, producer, and drummer. So that's him playing drums on this track. Who melds avant-garde experimentalism with hip-hop production techniques. And yeah, he's kind of bringing together aspects of jazz, neo-soul, and alternative hip-hop in a very kind of hyperactive way. And that kind of links in with the album art, I guess, and that as I say, that title Animals as well. His first album was called Go Get Ice Cream and Listen to Jazz, which nice. Is good advice for life, I think.
Nice.
This is his third record that has just come out. I think this kind of gives you some idea of what to expect from the album. The album kind of flits all over the place. It's got a really kind of like restless, skittish energy to it you would maybe get from like a Flying Lotus album. All the tracks kind of run into each other and they kind of go off in different directions. But this was one of the kind of taster tracks for the album, and I've just, again, this is one that I've been kind of meaning to bring in for a wee while. I kind of immediately was intrigued by this track. And confused, I think, as well. As you say, there's a lot kind of going on that does feel quite claustrophobic, especially on the first kind of couple of listens. But to me, it does kind of open out the more you listen to it, and the different elements do kind of coalesce over time. Do you want to take it from there? I've got a few more.
Sure. Yeah, I'll take over. I think the things that were kind of... So I'll start with the positives. So the positives were, I like the rhythmic element of this. Obviously, Casa Overall is a drummer as well as a producer. And I like the drumming on this track, and I like the rhythm. I like the sort of, I like the tempo of the track. I think it's a nice slow groove. And there's nothing like super energetic on this track, actually, apart from, you know, we were talking about the record sleeve and the capital letters and stuff. There's nothing like super, super energetic. In fact, when you get to the verse that's by Theo Croker.
No, it's Nick Keem. Sorry, he's the one that's doing the vocals.
Oh, okay. I was looking at a lyric website, Lyrics Genius, and it says that there's the two vocalists are on here, and it's saying the verses are Nick Keem, and then there's also a verse by Theo Croker, because the verse that starts, I just need the real thing. For once, goddamn, I can see through your hazy master plan. They've got this down as Theo.
No, that's definitely Nick Keem.
Definitely Nick Keem. Okay. So when it gets to that verse, anyway, my point's the same. When it gets to that verse, like, the vocal just goes really, like, slow and treacly, and just has this kind of, like, really, really laid back, like, I don't know what the vocal effect is on it. It just makes it sound really fuzzy and hazy. And I thought that was cool. And I think the whole track is very, very, very cool. It's dripping with cool. It made me think of the last Kendrick Lamar record, about how hip hop is coming at different intersections with other types of black music, if I can say that, like, and meeting up with jazz, and not just in the way that hip hop is just sampling jazz, but is actually being jazzy. And I couldn't put my finger on, is this a jazz track? Is this a hip-hop track? Is this somewhere in the middle? I don't know enough about either genre really to be able to tell you if this is original or not, but I couldn't comfortably say I know anything that sounds too much like this. I get where the influences are, but I don't know if I know a track that's specifically as jazzy and hip-hoppy as this. Maybe there's a million things, I just don't know what they are. So that's all positive as far as I'm concerned. Some of the lyrical choices on this are just weird, though. Like the final chorus, you could cry to your mama, but she don't want no drama. I've been washing on my karma, got me working like a farmer.
Farmer, yeah, that's a strange farmer. Lyric.
The lyrics are just like, because everything is so thoughtfully put together and artfully put together, and every musical decision on this track feels like there's some kind of like purpose, even right to the sort of last, you know, the last few seconds as the piano just like squonks away up to nonsense. Feels like there's some kind of like theory or story behind that, and you kind of feel that the next track on the record will pick up from that. And so why are the lyrics just so like childish and like so like, I mean, you just dash them down, mama, farmer, blah blah blah. I can't fathom that. Like, where's the kind of complexity in the lyrics that marries up and challenges you, like the music's challenging you to make sense of it? To me, that's a kind of a missed opportunity. Or, and this is eminently possible, I just don't get it. Maybe there's something going on here that I just don't get.
Yeah, I don't know. There's the lyric about the farmer. Is that kind of like hinting back at like plantation workers and that kind of idea of like black struggle, or am I just kind of reading too much into that?
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't want to say you're stretching, because I just don't know. There's nothing in the context that would suggest that to me.
He's talked about this album kind of dealing with some mental health struggles that he's had. So you get wee hints of it here. He talks about, I filled prescriptions to block out vision, still feel the tremble of a victim. Now the music is my therapist. We talk out every night in the booth trying to repair this shit. So he's kind of talking about some kind of struggles that he's had. Maybe he's talking about struggles that people have had in the past. I don't know. But maybe I'm just conflating those two things. But you're right. There's something a little bit kind of clumsy about that. The main reason that it's there is that it rhymes with mama and drama, you know, in some way.
The follow up lyric to the one you quoted there as well, about the therapist lyric, is we all trying to break free like a bird in the wind, because we all going home in the end, which sort of says nothing. Like it doesn't really mean really anything. It's just so cliched and hackneyed kind of metaphor that has been like the sort of bird flying free and all that. It's almost like Oasis, that lyric there. It's sort of like, it's a sort of metaphor to nothing. It doesn't really signify anything. We're all going home in the end. What does that really, really mean? Maybe it means something about mental health or whatever. I don't know. But I think what these lyrics do, and I think this is an unfortunate thing, is because they are so simplistic, they are jarring. I found them jarring. Yeah. Even from the first listen, I was like, mama, farm. I was like, oh, right. I'll need to go back and think about that a little bit more. And because they're jarring, you kind of want to focus on them and analyze them a little bit. And I don't think they stand up to a huge amount of, thought. Which is just. I think it's just a strange decision. You know,
it's a shame because the music is so good.
The music's so good.
The first word in the track is sync, and there's something about this track that makes me think of that bit in Get Out, you know, when he's in the chair and he kind of slides down through the chair into this kind of dark void of the sunken world. And it's got that kind of weird, as you say, there's kind of a hazy quality to it. There's also a kind of like hypnotic quality to it. There's a kind of circular motion to the way that the drums and the horns are working. What is it that's doing that, that's making me say that? What is it about the kind of... to me, it does feel like a kind of looks like a vortex almost of drums and horns.
I think it's just a riff. I think it's almost like to the point where it's almost like a sample. So I don't know if maybe the Cassette Overall is played maybe like 16 bars or whatever of drums, and then that's been looped, and then there's drums over the top, like filling and adding variety. So it's maybe he's made his own drums into a kind of a sample, essentially, and maybe then put the other instruments and sampled them on top as well and produced a loop. That's I guess that's possibly what's going on. But you just imagine, like, let's name like two or three hip hop artists who, if we drop them on that track, would take that and just take it, you know, elevate it up a level. I mean, you think about, I've mentioned Kendrick Lamar, but I mean, Kendrick Lamar on any hip hop track is going to take that up a level. But you put Andre 3000 on there and give him a verse on there.
Yeah, there's a track on the album that's got Danny Brown on it, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But that works really, really well. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I'm not saying the people on there aren't talented, but clearly those verses are written, and I can't imagine anyone's just gone, aye, that's fine, just leave that as it is. That's a conscious decision to leave it like that. So I just don't know why. I'm just going to need a blog post explaining why at some point down the line. I feel like I'll never get it, though. And that's just really sad.
I would say give the album a shot, because as I say, it's a really kind of restless listen, but it's very enjoyable. There's a lot of invention all the way through, and as you say, like, you know, you said that the end of that track kind of hints at something that's to come. There is that kind of sense all the way through that you're kind of going through,
yeah,
some kind of maze almost, or some kind of journey almost. Even if maybe the lyrical themes maybe don't all come together in the way that they could have done.
I mean, that's what kind of makes me, that to me, the lyrical content of hip-hop is the thing that makes me return to it multiple, multiple times. I find great hip-hop records are very, very listenable multiple, multiple, multiple times. Because if you get, it's not always explaining life and situations that I have intimate knowledge of, certainly. But I find like wordplay and great imagery and humor and storytelling and all that inside hip hop tracks make me return to them, because I want to hear and I want to think more and I want to dissect and I want to remember and I want to sing along and whatever. And yeah, it's really funny how it's almost, maybe it's a postmodern thing. Maybe it is an attempt to just not do that, to just consciously do something else. But I feel like it would have to be even more obviously not doing that for it to be postmodern. Do you know what I mean? It would have to be like, I can't explain that.
I think it probably just goes down to the fact that he thinks he's being deeper than he is with his lyrics.
Maybe it's that. I kind of didn't want to say that, but it's possible that I read an interview with Cassatt overall about his kind of musical theory and also where he's at in terms of like his position in the world and stuff. And I kind of just thought, again, like almost like the lyrics, I just kind of thought, I don't really know what you're saying. You're saying stuff, but you're not really saying anything. And words are coming out, but there's no real depth of meaning behind it. So yeah, I have mixed emotions about that track, because I want to like it. I do want to like it, and I like bits of it, but something about it is just keeping me at a distance. I can't fall in love with it.
That's fair.
That's him in the bin. Get in the bin, Casa. That's you in the bin. Me Casa, it's not Sue Casa. Casa.
You can come around my house, Casa. You're welcome here.
Okay, fair enough. Right, let's move on. We've unpicked Casa as much as it's possible to do. So let's move on to a very long track, actually, this week to finish us off with new tracks. Christadora House by Emma Tricker. Anything you want to say in advance of us listening to this?
Again, just the kind of classic pod format allows us to have a long track like this, I think. So
yeah.
Again, this is one that I've been wanting to bring in for a while and talk about.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a long one, like I said, 7.5 minutes. So settle down and here we go.
Thank you.
I thought, you know, I could cut that off there 20 seconds ago, but I thought I'm just going to let that ride right out, all 7.5 minutes of it, Across the Door of House by Emma Tricker. So yeah, as you said, as you trailed before we listened to that, this does feel like something that if we were forced to pick two tracks this week, this maybe wouldn't be one of them, not necessarily because it isn't good, but just because it's so expansive and it contains a huge amount of information, which is not a cool way of saying it's a big, long, old thing. but it's a really interesting track. Right out the gate, on my first listen to Emma Tricker's voice, I just thought, oof, not in love with this vocal style. Like, it's just so... I found it a little bit clipped, and there's also like she does a really kind of unusual tremolo at one point. She kind of goes oh like that, which I just kind of found bizarre. But a few lessons in, I've come to enjoy the vocal style a little bit more, and try to make sense of it with the track and how it blends in with the concept of what the track is trying to do. And overall, I do think this is a pretty stunning piece of work, I would say.
I think so. So as I say, I've been waiting to kind of bring something in from this album for a wee while. So the album came out, the album's called Aspirin's Son, and it came out at the start of April. And as I say, I've just been kind of waiting for a moment just to kind of, as you say, give it that kind of space to breathe that it kind of deserves and needs. I thought it'd be a good closer for this week. And I do think the album is really quite magnificent, actually. It's a really lovely album. It's come out in Bella Union. Her voice maybe is an acquired taste. She's been making records for quite a few years now, and her voice is getting increasingly kind of weathered. It's got a kind of cracked, as you say, a slightly clipped quality to it. That makes me think of people like Karen Dalton and Beth Orton as well. Anybody who loved that Beth Orton album from last year called Weather Alive, I think, is in for a real treat with this album. I just think it's a really, as you say, a really kind of stunning piece of work. Emma Tricker was... Born and raised in Italy, and is now based in London. But she was kind of, as I say, born in Italy. So she was kind of surrounded. If you were to kind of write a kind of cult, mysterious, kind of folk artist from the 70s or something like that, you would write her story. But it's not fiction with her. She's the kind of real deal. So she was kind of surrounded by like giallo comic books and Ennio Morricone scores and that kind of thing. And she was a proper kind of troubadour. Like she would kind of like travel around with her kind of battered guitar case and play wherever she could and that kind of thing. And it was while she was kind of traveling around that she was discovered playing on stage by Jane Weaver and her husband Andy Votell.
Yep.
And Andy Votell he runs Finders Keepers Records, and he kind of decided that he wanted to put out her first album, which was called Relic, and I think that was a kind of like compilation of things that she'd been doing up until that point. And if you look at that album cover, Relic, it does look like one of those kind of long lost acid folk records from the early 70s, and she just looks the real deal kind of thing. And since then, she has just been kind of like traveling around, kind of following her muse, if you like. And she's kind of gone to like different parts of the world. And she's made a lot of really nice records over the years. And this is her second one with a kind of set band. So she's got this band with Sonic Youth Steve Shelley and Dream Syndicate guitarist Jason Victor. And I think they are doing a really good job of kind of framing her songs and following them where they need to go, if you like. And there is something kind of very kind of proggish about the whole album. It's got a kind of very kind of Pink Floyd attitude to space and atmosphere.
Yeah.
And it's unafraid to take its time and kind of withhold its payoff as well. There's a real kind of sense of delayed gratification about this track and the album as well. There's a lot of tracks that kind of go over 6 and 7 minutes. But yeah, I just think it's a really beautiful, warm sound that they create, that kind of warm bass sound, that you get splashy drums and just these kind of washes of guitar as well. And then, as I say, her kind of weathered voice over the top of it just works really, really well on this track.
Yeah. Musically, it is interesting. To me, it's the sound of what I imagine. This is just the fiction I made up in my head about this track, is that Emma Tricker would come to the studio with the basic concept of this track, maybe some verses or choruses or whatever, and a couple of chords, and said, right, it's this and it's this. And the feel is restraint, and the feel is mystery. And we're looking for kind of a bassy, kind of echoey sound. And it feels like the musicians would be standing in a circle almost, and like looking at each other, and it's reactive to each other. You put it really appositely a minute ago. So you said something like they're taking it where it needs to go, I think is what you said. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. The most exciting part of that for me is the last sort of the final portion of the track, which is like when there's a sort of a sense of build up. But it's almost as if each time an instrument starts to make the ascent, so every time the drums, you sort of hear the toms pump, 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 and they're coming up. And then you feel the guitar rising, you know, there's a sort of delayed guitar, high notes and stuff, building up the tension as well. You can feel the bass mounting. But it never really reaches a sort of crescendo, like massive, huge moment of everyone pounding like Arcade Fire would do.
No.
It doesn't get there. And then it all kind of tumbles away. So it's just like it's a very, very sensitively played track. And the musicians are clear. This is why I said standing in a circle. They're like looking at each other, and restraint seems to be the watchword. And her vocal, which I started off by saying I was a little bit unsure about, it's because it is so delicate in a way. It's quite a robust, bassy vocal, but it's almost not singing. It's singing and not singing. It's almost kind of talking while singing, and then just this like sort of bassy vibrato thing that's going on. I think it's a tremolo earlier on, I meant vibrato. So it's simple in a way, but it's complex in another way. And the complexity comes not from the notes written down on the page or whatever. The complexity comes from the playing and the feel,
the sensitivity of it.
Yeah, sensitivity. Is this a track about feel? More than anything else. And I think that's why at 7.5 minutes, I think that's actually fine for this track, because it works its way very gently to that full length, and it just feels good. I mean, do you know what the most ironic thing for me is about listening to these two tracks back to back? Is with the last track, the Casa Overall track, the lyrics stood out so much to me. They were so prominent and so simple that they just made my brain start to unpick them and make sense of them. I don't think I know any of the lyrics on this Emma Tricker track. I don't think I'm aware of any. I haven't picked any of them out or anything, because it's about the overall. It's about the overall wash for me, this track. And I could look up the lyrics and start dissecting them and all that sort of stuff, but I don't really want to. I don't find it necessary for this particular track. I just think that this is more than the sum of its parts. And each of the parts is kind of delightful in its own way, but it builds to a very nice, I'm going to say oil painting. That's what this one feels like to me.
I like that. Yeah, absolutely. And I would really recommend people checking out the album Aspen Sun. It's a beauty.
Yeah. And shout out to the album art on this one as well, which is the Aspen Sun album art, which is a really, really cool I guess it's photographs layered on top of each other. So you can see her face, which is a kind of almost like, what's the Beatles record? Beatles for Sale, almost like a straight to camera, black and white portrait, with her own face shadowed over the top of her face. That doesn't make sense unless you look at it. And then there's like a sort of kaleidoscope of images around that, which are flowers and almost look like her hair cascading off the top of this portrait. It's a really, really cool sleeve, and one which absolutely aptly captures the track and presumably the record as well. This is a good point to finish on. And I like that we have the, I mean, you can play whatever we like. Do you know what I mean? We started off with the Beatles today. We can play anything we like. And I like that we take a minute for Mong Tong and we take a minute for Emma Tricker and we listen to things that are weird. You know, Namibian nose flute and all that. We get it in, you know? So that's a real winner for me. And well done, sir, for finding it.
Good. Thank you. Yep, enjoyed those tracks this week.
Mm. So that takes us on to our inevitable final section. And I don't normally do this, but, I do normally do this. What I normally do is I say, we're coming on to the vinyl word, which is Andrew's final segment of the show, where he's going to lift down from his collection of records something, and he's going to make a connection. Sometimes I really like strong, obvious connection to one of the new tracks, or sometimes just a kind of tenuous one. He's just trying to bring something in. And he tells us all about it and leaves us on a happy note. And this week, when I heard this Veronica Falls track, I've kind of given it away then, I do apologise. When I heard this track, I thought I immediately liked it, and I'd never heard of who this band were before. And I thought, I'm going to find out what the connection is. I'm going to work it out. You know, like when we went on Matthew's Traitors podcast and I did all sorts of clever things and won his game.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I'm gonna work out this connection, and I hope it's not really obvious because I could not work it out. I have no idea what the connection is to the rest of the new music this week. I've maybe just looked in the wrong places or whatever. So, but anyway, before I hand over to Andrew, I'm going to tell you, this track's a corker. I'd never heard this before, but I really, really like it. So, so final word, have at you.
So I very nearly brought in a track by another band. So that quote from the Teenage Fan Club track, "The past is a foreign," and the original quote is, "The past is a foreign country. They do different things there." So that's from LP Hartley's "The Go Between." So I very nearly brought in something by the Go Betweens, but I didn't, because I wanted to bring in this track this week, and it's staring you right in the face, Ian. There's nothing clever about this. The track is called Teenage, so Teenage Fan Club, Teenage. There you go. That's as deep as the link goes.
Damn. I do you know what I thought it was? I thought, right, hold on. Who are Veronica Falls? So I looked them up on Wikipedia, and who are their members? And have they been in any bands with any of the people that we've been listening to this week? I tried to cross-reference and stuff, and it was just the song was called Teenage. So I did completely overlook that one.
Yeah.
Damn.
So it's Teenage, but it's also just indie pop gold. This track is just like a perfect 3-minute indie pop tune.
Well, I thought that was the link. That's what I thought was the link, actually. Right. But I didn't actually say that. I thought this was, this is like Teenage Fan Club and Lemon Twigs, and that's the link.
Yeah. So, I mean, perfect indie pop tune, just a perfect song, full stop, I think, pretty much this one. It's just an absolute peach, this track. And it kind of goes in that kind of tradition of teenage. You know, the kind of possibilities are endlessness of kind of young love, something like Big Stars 13 or Do You Believe in Magic by The Loving Spoonful. It's got that kind of feel to it. Just that kind of idea of love's young dream kind of thing. And it's from an album called Waiting for Something to Happen, which again came out in Bella Union. And the album came out, I think it was 2013 it came out, and it's a really, really strong indie pop record, but Teenage is the one for me. Just the kind of fuzzy rush of the guitars, and every time they do that, they sing that thing, "Driving Late at Night, I'll Let You Listen to the Music You Like, Then I Drop You Home."
you know, there's just something really kind of sweet and innocent about that, and just the way they sing it just really kind of hits you. And it makes you kind of nostalgic for adolescent experiences that you maybe even never actually had yourself. Veronica Falls, they were only together for about 5 years. They only made 2 albums, but they're 2 very good albums, and they've been involved in a lot of kind of cool projects since. I'm pleased you kind of looked them up, and because they have done some cool things since. A group called Ultimate Painting, who are very good. Patience is the project of the vocalist here, and it's a shame that the drummer actually passed away in 2018, called Patrick Doyle, tragically young. So he was also involved in a project called Boys Forever, which is worth checking out as well. So they have done lots of cool bits and bobs, but Veronica Falls is probably still the best known project, and Teenage is just, as I say, just an absolute gem of a song.
Ah, well, you can't set it up any better than that, man. Right, so we're going to play ourselves out here with a little bit of Veronica Falls, and all that is left for us to do is to thank you very much for listening, and to say we shall see you down the road. Catch you later.
Yep, see you next time.